We are about to chat with a mom who has experienced egregious abuse of power in child welfare. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org. Join us as we continue our conversation with Tasha.
The investigation continues. They filed the termination of parental rights against my husband and I, and a single parent termination against him for our oldest, even though he said nothing bad happened.
You know, in these cases, we're seeing how the child abuse pediatricians are often missing things. They're so singularly focused. Somebody saw this one bruise and was like, boom, this is where we're going. And then that's the answer for everything, instead of considering all of the other possibilities. But the two things that you said that I really just want to make a point of, the one child who does not share genetics, who did not have this shared pregnancy, is totally free of fractures. And to look at that and ignore that piece is a huge oversight, in my opinion. And then the second thing is, they had an 8-year-old boy being asked questions and affirming that abuse was not happening in the home. It would probably be challenging for an 8-year-old boy to keep up a lie. And they ask things in such a roundabout way that you end up getting something out of the situations where that's actually the case. There's so many things that they missed here. Even this nurse looked at you and said, she has injuries too. She immediately thinks, oh, she's getting beat up too, instead of, hey, she has injuries. Let's find out where her injuries came from. What are the things that may have caused these injuries? And maybe the shared genetics that she has with her child could explain their injuries too. Like, they weren't looking for a medical explanation. I've been calling it lazy medicine, because it's real easy to say, this is the most obvious thing, let's just call it this, and then we're done. Our job is done. We can walk away.
He testified in our case as well. Like, he testified before the court. And it's very heartbreaking, because not only did he tell him, the investigators, he told everyone the same thing. And it's not like we had any contact with him, because in the beginning, the restrictions they had was so ridiculous. My husband could not even talk to him. And then they lied and they said that we said we didn't want his mother supervising the phone call, so he just can't call him. What? That we only wanted my family to supervise. And I'm like, that's not true. Whatever questions they were asking him, whatever it was, we were never around. We were never present. She was the one involved, because then she had to come. She doesn't live in the same area as us. She had to come down to then intervene in that situation for him. He went straight forward and had been giving them essentially the same answers from the jump before he even understood or even realized what was going on. Then they are with family, and then repeated injuries happen. We didn't even know repeated injuries happened. Guess what happened? We were fussy. When I received the phone call from my family member saying, we may need to go back to the hospital because they are fussy, I don't know what's wrong, and they're not really drinking their milk. Wow, that sounds like a lot of things that I've been saying, right? Made an appointment to the pediatrician. Went to the pediatrician. Pediatrician tells us the same craziness. Just swaddle them more. They're just fussy. Moral reflex. The next day, it got worse. Got the phone call. I think we just need to go to the hospital. We go to the hospital. Take them to the ER. The ER physician is examining them. And we explain to them multiple fractures. It's a DCF investigation. They're with this family member. I am allowed to be here. I'm under the supervision of the family member. The physical exam from head to toe, they were moving everything. They were wiggling everything. there was actually nothing on their skin. When I told my family member, we used to use these Velcro things, and I'm assuming that's what gave him the bruise. And he was like, we're not using that, and threw it to the side, never used it again. But guess what? When we stopped using it, they never got those bruises again. Because with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, what causes the bruising is the shearing forces against the skin. Now we know that. At the time, we didn't know. So take them to the ER. They're like, maybe it's just, the whole reflux thing. Maybe that's all it is. Both twins at that point were both on the medications. They have all of these injuries, fractures. You don't know what they're crying for. What do we do? They say, okay, well, we'll do another skeletal bone survey. And now skeletal bone survey is just x-rays of head to toe. Then they said, you have the choice. I'll discharge you guys because we already know there's something, they have these fractures and stuff. Just watch them. Or I can admit them and then see what's going on. Even though I'm the one being investigated, I was the one who said, keep them and find out what's wrong with my kids. She said, I hear you, mom. Put in the admission orders. They were admitted. Before they had the skeletal survey, my family member was holding one of my twins, and apparently one of the injuries happened right there in the emergency room. When the doctor and the team comes in and they said they compared, I guess, the radiological exams and found that there were new fractures in whatever spots, my family member pointed to that part of twin A's arm. He was like, would it be like right here? The doctor said, yes. Why? And he said, because I was holding him downstairs in the ER before they were going in for the x-rays. He pushed against me and his arm deformed. And now there's a fracture in that spot. So then everyone's like, oh my gosh, something is really wrong with these kids. The doctor said, did he cry? He said, no, that's not good, because then that means they're getting used to it. They did an OI panel. The OI panel, one twin, they didn't really see anything, but the other twin, he had like a slight mutation, but I was told it wasn't enough. Did additional testing, couldn't really find anything else. Got discharged. They saw a hematologist who was concerned this was an Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, hypermobility spectrum disorder type of situation. We are only in October 2022. Let's just put it that way. They're 3 months old at this point.
Okay.
They tried to take the kids from my family member because these new fractures happened after they were taken from us. The judge did not take the kids, thankfully. Took them to the hematologist now for workup because of the whole bruising thing and the bleed. And her concern was Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, collagen disorder, hypermobility spectrum disorder. There were third injuries. Twin B had incidentally another finding of another fracture. We're in November now of 2022. My kids were taken September 21st. New fractures. How did this happen? I don't know. They were not even with me. I'm under supervision. I'm under restrictions. Nobody knows what happened.
How did they know? Was it fussiness again that they were like, oh, something's wrong, let's bring them in? Or was it just a regularly scheduled x-ray?
It was a repeated scheduled bone survey. My family member took them, had the x-rays done. So then we go see the orthopedic the following week. And he tells us, so your twin B had another fracture that was not there before.
You would think this would be like the mic drop moment, right?
Right.
If the first injury after removal wasn't enough, here we are, the second set. They're not in their care, but we're just going to proceed with termination parental rights.
We're just going to ignore the fact that the fractures were happening even after removal, get to the termination of parental rights trial, and we lost. It was terrible. They alleged that I had postpartum depression, even though I did not have postpartum depression. And I had the medical record to prove I didn't have postpartum depression.
What I don't understand is parents who actually make mistakes and physically abuse their kids often get case plans and they get their kid back. I feel like you've got to be like walking around blindfolded to not see what's actually going on and that there's a medical reason for these injuries. However, even if you thought that you did this, why did they not permit you to work a case plan and reunify with your children?
Just filed an expedited termination. I don't know why.
I mean, I can answer that if I'm playing devil's advocate. They look at twins with a ton of fractures and injuries. And so that meets the definition of egregious in the department's position. And that's what they ultimately convinced the court. It's egregious. In Florida, if you've committed what is considered egregious abuse, meaning it usually means life-threatening. Although it's worth pointing out, her twins never needed surgery or treatment for any of these things. But yeah, if you commit egregious abuse, then they can just what we commonly referred to as upfront CPRU, not give you a case plan. The even sadder part about her case is without any harm to the older brother, any history of abuse, he kind of gets lost in all this, but he lost his dad too. You know, they don't have to prove that anything ever happened to him. And not only did he corroborate what Tasha and her husband were telling everyone, but his testimony was, I love my parents. I want to be with them. I want to be with my baby brothers. I don't remember exactly how they said it, but you know, there's no abuse in my home. It's worth noting. I mean, Tasha's husband's ex-wife is supportive of them as well.
I'm assuming she was in some form of relationship with your husband. She would probably have some type of idea. And like, who would have worse to say about you than your ex, right?
And she had nothing bad to say about either one of us.
And acknowledges that they did not abuse these kids. Yeah, if anybody would love the opportunity to talk trash about their ex, you know, you would think here would be the opportunity.
I've had kids who've had like guns at their head, and like, that's life threatening. They got a case plan and the kid went home like a couple months later. Why are these cases where it's like, this doesn't even sound like abuse? They're not even giving them the opportunity, which is crazy.
Again, playing devil's advocate, these are little babies who can't speak up, who can't run away, etc. So I don't agree with it, but I can see that that's why they think they're justified in doing what they're doing. But yeah, don't even get me started on the sex abuse cases I've got where they give parents another chance. Like, the inconsistency is crazy.
For someone to hear these stories, it's like, this is horrendous. Like, is this what happens? But then when you're part of child welfare and you see that this is not what generally happens for kids who actually are in danger, it's just insane. The fractures that we're talking about here, it seems like a lot of the other families that we've spoken with, they're called fractures, right? But when you go to the actual medical experts, a lot of these kids, they're actually more like lesions. Is that the same with your boys too?
When we got a hold of one of our doctors who reviewed the case and found findings of bone fragility and metabolic bone disease, what he explained was a lot of those fractures were actually like little cracks. Like, it was just like micro fractures, like little cracks in the bones. So they weren't necessarily full blown, but he explained it like they were more like cracks within the bone. That's how he explained it. We had another doctor who reviewed, explained, and corroborated that if you look at their radiological scans, especially the CT scans, they had findings that would be attributed to bone fragility. So brittle bone disease is confirmed. The sad part is that everyone glossed over it and never put those findings of brittle bone disease in their actual reports. They just talked about the fractures, and they talked about how the fractures had callus and how the fractures were in different stages of healing. So it had to be a child abuse situation, but didn't talk about the fact that the different stages of healing dated back to prenatal, while I was pregnant, after birth, while they were hospitalized. Like, even my twin B, for example, who had rib fractures, they were like, oh, all of these rib fractures must have been from you. Someone snapped on these kids, not necessarily because the rib fractures dated back to before he was even discharged from the NICU. So who gave it to him?
Maybe we need to be investigating the NICU.
The search warrant for my phone. So my twins were still hospitalized. I was on the way to the hospital. As I come out of my house, all of a sudden, it's a cop behind me. Driving, coming out of the complex, he's still following me. Then he flashes the lights. I'm like, great, it was for me. Pull over, side of the road, asks me for my license, registration, those things. All right, fine. Gave it to him. Then he comes back, asks me for my phone. And I'm like, no. Like, that was my first reaction. No. Then he tells me there's a search warrant for my phone. So I'm like, well, I need to call my attorney, because I was told that anything that you guys do now has to go through him. I'm picking up my phone to call my attorney. And then I even said I needed to call my family member, who was also going to be at the hospital, because we were going to meet each other there to talk to this particular orthopedic who wanted to speak to us about the children. I'm telling this cop, and I don't remember exactly the chain of events, but I'm trying to explain to him, like, my attorney is supposed to meet with your detective today, and you're stopping me from my cell phone when they're supposed to have a meeting. I'm not understanding. Let me call him. I'm in the driver's side. There's the passenger window. He goes through the window, grabs me, trying to get my phone. So I'm trying to call my attorney. So then I come out the car and I'm screaming for help. This was broad daylight. This was early in the morning. I'm talking about this is the time people are going to work. I was trying to get to the hospital, waving down cars for help, right? I'm hoping someone pulls out their phone and start recording. I'm hoping somebody intervenes because this man just put his hands on me. He grabs me. He slams me on the hood of the car. Then he puts cuffs on me. I had a brace on my wrist, De Quavon's tenosynovitis in both of my wrists. And I also have hypermobility of my thumb joint. So my thumb joint is constantly dislocating. So even up to now, I still have to wear a brace because my thumb joint dislocates out of place. But at the time, I had to wear specific like splint brace. I had a knee brace from when I fell during my pregnancy. I was still in physical therapy. I couldn't do physical therapy until I got cleared from the C-section. So I had just started walking at that point. They said I was trying to run in the street. I was trying to run away. I'm not really sure where exactly I was running to with all of that, with my brace and all of that. Got slammed on the car. Then he took the phone because then the phone fell, all of these things. It was fine. He called for backup. All of these police cars were there and it's just one of me. Then they make the comment saying that I was a big girl. That's why he had to use excessive force. Even though I had just had a C-section and I just literally got cleared from my C-section after giving birth to twins. They took the phone. I said, you can have the phone. It's just, I wanted to talk to my attorney. My attorney did eventually get on the phone and my attorney was asking like, we were going to meet today. If you wanted the phone, fine. But what was the point of all of that? So they took the phone. And so that was the search warrant for my phone. Fast forward to the arrest. Of course, someone followed me again. They had sent the same cop that actually showed up to the hospital when I took my twin A to the hospital. I came out of my complex and I saw the cop parked in front of the complex. So I'm driving, and as I'm driving off, I see the cop come up behind me. I said, you've got to be kidding me. Where am I going? To see my kids, because I was going to go into surrender the next day. So I was going to see them before I walked into jail. He follows me, called my attorney, my other attorney, answered, picked up the phone. I told him, there's a cop following me. It's not funny, but I was so like, you get so frustrated, you get to the point you're not even scared. You're just like, man, what do y'all want from me? I don't understand what you want from me. So I called, said, there's a cop following me. So he said, all right. I said, just, you can stay on the phone in the event he's following me and not just necessarily driving behind me. I said, okay. Boom, the lights came on. I said, he was for me. Comes up to the car. Did you know you have a warrant for your arrest? I said, yeah, I'm supposed to go in tomorrow. I still have my attorney on speakerphone. I said, it's the same officer that cornered me at the hospital. He was telling the officer, look, she's going in tomorrow. They're going to book her tomorrow. What? I can't believe this is even happening in the middle of a busy street, right? No, didn't want to do it. He had to take me right then and there. Got out the car, let them do what they needed to do. They took all of my stuff and then they took me. I don't know what the reason was that they had to follow me. I never had my Miranda rights read to me. I don't know what it was that they were trying to do, if they thought that would have been something to make me break at the moment. But when it comes to a parent who is falsely accused of doing something to their children they never did, you're not going to break down because they're going to keep going until they get their kids back. So I did whatever they told me to do. And I got out the next day. And then we had our termination trial a couple of weeks later. They painted the whole postpartum story that I explained earlier. We lost. I ended up being seen in Boston by a physician after my specific test results came back, because I didn't even have my test results yet. Got the official diagnosis of hypermobile EDS. Then I got in touch with Valentina. The case reopened. Got multiple physicians involved, from another Florida geneticist to another geneticist in Ohio, who also does pediatric bone health, to a child abuse pediatrician that we had look at the case, Eli Neuberger.
Just to add some credibility and authority to Dr. Eli Neuberger, he is considered the founding father of child abuse pediatrics. Also was concerned when he was helping develop this that it could get out of hand if people weren't following proper procedures and ethical guidelines, right? And the thing that I respect the most about him is when he was initially hired by Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital to testify against the Kowalskis for Maya's trial. And they were paying him like hundreds of thousands of dollars to be an expert witness. And when he started getting into the medical records, he told them, keep your money. He reached out to the Kowalskis and offered to testify for them for free. The fact that he would do that, we're not just talking about you've got a child abuse pediatrician. You've got the child abuse pediatrician. What he did with the Kowalski case shows incredibly high ethical standards.
We tried to count today, I think, how many doctors are we up to that like agree with you?
We're up to 7 because it started with the pediatric hematologist. The EDS thing, it stuck with me because prior to all of that even happening, when I started seeing the orthopedic about my knee when I fell and he did my x-rays, he told me, you know, your kneecaps are rotated. And I said, oh, is it because I'm accident prone? And I just made it into a joke because I'm like, something's always wrong with me. I'm always getting hurt by like the weirdest things. And next thing you know, I'm in physical therapy. I'm in a brace, something. And he was like, no, you were born this way. So then I followed up with my primary care provider and I told my primary care provider and she was like, have you ever heard of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome? And that's when I started realizing, oh my gosh. She checked me. She was like, you have a lot of hypermobility. I think you need to be seen by genetics. And that's actually what triggered my evaluation separate from my twins.
Now, did you immediately recognize that this issue that you're having would explain your son's fractures?
I did not initially know it was connected until I started reading more about it. The first thing that came up when I read about Ehlers-Danlos, it says it affects blood vessels, joints, bones, cartilage. I said, wow, it's like 13 different types. So depending on the type, it affects different parts of the body. The issue, I guess, that came up with our case with this particular type of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is that they don't even know the mutation that causes the actual disorder to know exactly what it does and does not affect. And because they don't know the mutation, then there's the, well, are you even sure your kids have it? Because they're still babies. If it's an autosomal dominant condition, you only need one parent. And it is an autosomal dominant condition.
And I think it's important to point out that the type that you have, the hypermobile type, you can't like do a genetic test for it. It has to be a specialist. Everyone likes to say, oh, well, everyone got the genetic testing. They don't have anything. It's like, well, that was really just the first step in ruling out other conditions.
There's like a physical exam that you have to do. And it's not even just based on hypermobility alone. They're looking at other physical features. Do you have like the blue gray tint to your sclera, which I have it. So do the children. Obviously, the oldest does not have it because he's not my biological, right? Is there that flexibility? Yes. Baton score, 9 out of 9. That's me. I have to wear braces when I do certain things because my finger joints are popping out of place. I had an orthopedic that said the reason why your hands hurt so much is because of the actual joint being popped out. Are my twins hypermobile? Am I a pediatrician? No. My pediatric nurse, no. Have I been around babies and children enough to know what looks normal and what doesn't? Yeah. They do the whole W-sitting thing. They will W-sit and then lay backwards and be comfortable. I've seen my children do things that it's like, are you going to be a gymnast? Like, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Do I believe that this is something they have inherited, even though there is no test to fully confirm? Yes. As far as the whole metabolic bone disease, now the radiological findings are there. And a lot of the brittle bones, even if it's not necessarily like an OI, osteogenesis imperfecta type of picture, metabolic bone disease can also be attributed to the types of medications that the mother is on during pregnancy. That came to light.
And you were on an IV with all kinds of meds that you had to take.
And then that came to light. So although it may be FDA approved to save the baby, it's still affects the fetus and the embryonic development of the bone. So then that made a lot of sense.
You were diagnosed with EDS after your first TPR trial, correct?
Correct. Then the case reopened and then we lost again for reasons that will probably never make sense to me.
Okay, so the case reopened or it was a re-TPR trial?
It's not a new trial. It was a reopening of the evidence, temporarily setting aside the judgment until she could hear the new evidence. So it's important to tell you guys too, when Tasha came to us, she had just found out she had HEDS. So we had that doctor lined up. And then, you know, we filed the motion. I'll call it a motion to reopen. There's a more technical term. And then in the meantime, she went and saw that other doctor, the one who talked about all the risks for metabolic bone disease. So we did an amended motion to include him. You know, department and guardian certainly objected to the trial being reopened. The judge did reopen it, but very clear instructions from there on out. We were only getting those two doctors, and that's it. They've testified over 1,000 times between them. So sure, like a handful of courts have not agreed with them, and that hurt us so much that they've come under attack because they defend parents. And I did have other doctors lined up that really couldn't be attacked, like Neuberger, for example, but I wasn't allowed to present them. But we still felt really good. I mean, despite the fact that they've come under attack, like, their credentials are still amazing, and they're incredibly intelligent. I mean, Harvard and Yale educated, years and years of experience. The department's experts, like, pale in comparison. It's almost laughable. But yet, ultimately, the court sided with them. It was a reopening, not technically a new trial. And then she basically granted TPR again.
You're telling me now that you've got seven different medical experts that are actually experts in these things who have all confirmed that there are medical reasons for these injuries. They're not listening to these doctors, obviously. Who is it they are listening to? Is there one doctor? Are there multiple doctors that the state used? What is that doctor's credentials?
So it's the CPT doctor, the child protection team doctor, was the star witness. We've been kind of trying to be respectful and not name a lot of names here today. I will tell you, she had only testified one other time ever. Her testimony was that in her entirety of her career, she had diagnosed child abuse 20 times. All the other times it had been diagnosed, it came with the help of others. I was actually going over the record today. They never talked about her education or any experience prior to her becoming the CPT director in less than 2 years prior to Tasha's case. That was the star witness of the first trial.
So we've got a baby, like a little tiny baby doctor, like a brand new squishy noob.
She was pretty green. So when we got the trial reopened.
And she was the director of the CPT?
Yeah. And it's worth noting she's not even there anymore. She really didn't last very long. The department and Guardian made clear, like, well, we want to call rebuttal doctors. Fine. That's fair game. And they had mentioned they were probably going to call that CPT doctor again. So I deposed her and I was appalled. She said, I don't know. I think we counted upwards of 140 times in her depo. That probably wasn't even 3 hours. I mean, that's how many questions that I asked her that she said, I don't know to. The way I would describe her is a jack of all trades, master of none. You know, she's not a geneticist. She's not a specialist in any of these fields, Ehlers-Danlos, any of it. So anyways, then they did bring in a second doctor who has a history with our Ehlers-Danlos doctor, doesn't like him, has made it a point to, like, go after him whenever he's presented the opportunity. But he, too, had only testified one other time. There's actually a documentary about that case. It's been pretty public. And the court didn't rule in his favor. He had a decent amount of experience, more than the child protection team doctor, I think maybe 10 years or so, but nowhere near our two doctors that testified. But he was just adamant that you can't diagnose HEDS in infants, but yet we'll acknowledge they have it. There are infants out in the world that have it, but he's going to, like, refuse to consider it until they're 4 or 5 years old. She found them more credible than our two guys is the short of it. By the way, there was a third doctor that was allowed to testify as to the methodology of the two main doctors on our side. And he said, yeah, everything they're doing is right. They're coming to their conclusions the right way. The judge wouldn't let him put on his own conclusions, which, of course, aligned with us. We went through 5 days of the department and Guardian just trying to keep our doctors from being allowed to testify, to say they were quacks, basically. So we went through that Daubert proceeding. And in the Daubert proceeding, we had a third doctor essentially vouch for the methods of the other two. Weirdly, the final judgment does not mention our doctor number three whatsoever. It's every other witness is in there and mentioned extensively. His exhibits are missing. We pointed that out to the court seeking rehearing, got blown off, if you will.
He's a Florida doctor, also has been consulted by child protection team for the state of Florida, who was also involved in saying, this is not what you're making it to be. This is a genuine case where there's underlying medical conditions that's causing the injuries to these children. Yeah, he was the one who confirmed that the near-miss car accident in conjunction with these medical conditions would have, you know, contribute to the injuries also, especially in my twin A that had the small liver injury.
I think you should know the court only heard two doctors and supposedly only read two reports, even though we filed the other ones. I don't know that she looked at them. But like Guardian and Department had two additional doctor's reports in our favor. Like they could have backed off because it was the right thing to do. They're supposed to want what is best for these children, right? When we sent them Dr. Neuberger's report, the response I got from DCF was, why are you sending me this? You know you're not allowed to have any more doctors. I'm like, because I'm still hoping you will do the right thing. Even if I can't put this before the judge, you should know. And by the way, that leads me to the other thing I want to point out. Guardian program failed to send that to their guardian. She didn't know about it for a long time. The guardian who testified the first go around actually did not support TPR for the older boy. Second go around, they seem to have forgotten because all of a sudden now they're advocating for everybody's to be terminated. The attorney that was speaking for them was, right? But the assigned guardian, it became very clear as time went on, she was on her side.
She's a nurse practitioner also.
Yeah. So she had like a medical knowledge and she was getting it. And they literally, I kid you not, they silenced her and then they fired her because they knew, we knew she was on our side. And we were trying to push some buttons there where we could to get her to speak up and do the right thing. And they canned her. Think about that, too. I mean, you know, if you go and volunteer for the program, don't be told what to do. Think for yourself. They did not follow the protocol when she wasn't really aligned with them. And I think that's what happened is when I called them on it, then shortly thereafter, all of a sudden she was gone.
They told me she quit. We later found out she was removed.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.